Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where we're shooting the shit with elected officials and candidates running for office to get to know the person beyond the politics.
Because politicians needed a rebrand.
Guys, we have some devastating news to start this podcast off with. And this is what I discovered today. This was groundbreaking in a way you don't want it to be. And it's that Madison Blue likes grape flavored Gatorade. Sociopathic. Do you have anything to say for yourself?
Yeah, I like grape flavored candy. I like grape flavored Gatorade. It's not like what I reach for. I'm not obsessed. I'm not a stan, but I don't mind it. And I like it sometimes. I rarely drink Gatorade though. And I've really had the gamut of flavors given my prior life as a soccer player. And I always just, you know, I thought the grape was fun. It was a fun flavor.
This is...
But I think like red is boring. I think orange is boring. I like the lemon lime. I like the blue, light blue.
The frost.
Frost.
Mm-hmm. No, I do agree with the rest of your sentiments, but we need to process. We need some time, some healing to get over the rest of this because that is unprecedented.
Listen,
we will be having a full investigation.
Us grape flavored lovers are just, you know, we are a different breed. We are what I like to call upper echelon. Speaking of grape, have you ever had cotton candy flavored grapes?
I have.
I'm obsessed. And the grocery store I go to, like, only has them sometimes. And I always go and check. Obsessed. They're so good.
They're a little too sweet for me, but I can appreciate you appreciating them.
I think they're just like, I find them like such a subtle little, right? When you pop it in your mouth, you're like, oh, cotton candy. And then you take a bite and it's back to grape. It's fun.
You know, we love a little tantalizing moment for the, you know, the senses. On another note, besides me having absolutely GW hair this evening, this is
G-dubs.
It's like literally like, hey guys, like, you know, when you're in the pool and you do like the hair flip up.
The best.
It's the best. And I did it.
Talk about a summer vibe is when you flip your hair up to be George Washington. Like that is core summer.
Without a doubt. It's one of the many reasons that summer is my favorite season.
Because just you can put your hair like George Washington.
Yeah. And then people just assume like, oh, she must have been at the pool. Like not going on a walk, getting extra sweaty.
Yeah. Right.
Just those things. But on a totally different note, not hair related, is I finally got into VP Harris's book, her second book, and it's super interesting. I will say, like, the first chapter, fluff. Like, she's clearly, this was published in 2018. Like, it's like very set up. Like, she's clearly like campaigning for, you know, giving like the pillars of like goodness and learning of her childhood. I always learned to like give 100%, you know, like that type of stuff. It's like
corny.
And like, I get why, but like, but the following chapters are actually super interesting. She talks about truancy programs that looked at keeping kids in school to prevent crime later down the line, like reforming like intervention programs, like some really interesting policy tidbits that she did, like performing like LGBTQ weddings, capital, like just all these really interesting things that like I feel like got really lost in the sauce the last few years of like who she really is from like a policy point of view or policy person. And I was like actually really excited reading it. I read literally, you know me, I don't have no patience and I cannot sit still for the life of me. I read literally 200 pages.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, in one sitting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and she needs, you know, she needs it. Unfortunately, people are so weird about her. Like the other day, someone was like, Biden, Trump, and then Kamala, she's even worse. It's just like there's this weird, it's the same thing with Hillary, like that, just like this women hatred for like kind of no reason, or often you're like, well, why? It's like she just bothers me. That's always it, you know?
They totally can't put a finger on it. And it's because, like, really, at the end of the day, it's the misogyny speaking, even if it's also
they act like men in politics, which,
well, she even
leadership is cheered
in
more.
One of the chapters, she talks about how, like, kind of meeting Doug, and it's like a very cute thing. And obviously, Doug is just adorable, and like, I want to pinch his cheeks, and how difficult dating was for her. And she really doesn't go very much into it, but just be in her 40s, the elected positions that she's in, woman of color, like all these things. It's like, can't obviously, clearly can't trust anyone. Like, I wouldn't if I were her either. So it's like, how do you navigate these things? And her talking about like really needing to compartmentalize like work versus personal. And I feel like we see that in like the way that she tries to relate, because she tries to like sometimes be relatable and just the way she's having conversations while still keeping herself and like who she really is out of it, because she wants to protect herself. And I totally get that. And I like empathize so much, but it like makes some of the things that would be more seamless in how she would, someone might say something if they were less protective of themselves and feeling like they needed to be in those moments.
Yeah, I feel like her flaw is that she does guard herself in that way of like needing to protect this image of like strong career woman. But like, kind of a sentiment that we like talked about last week is like, you can actually do it all. Like, you can show, you know, your personal side, your skincare routine, your interests outside of politics. That's what this whole fucking show is about. Having interests and hobbies and things that, you know, maybe people would be like, oh, there's a woman caring about what she looks like. But it's like, what's wrong with that? Like, what's wrong with that?
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we've have heard too, like she does like guard herself in interviews when people want to get to know her personality more or ask her things about pop culture or whatever. And I think being guarded in that way doesn't help her. And I think if she stepped into that more and showed that like, no, you can literally be like, sit at the boys' table and like be a powerhouse in your career, and then you can also like do the girly pop things.
Totally. And again, I understand where she's coming from. Like, and it might be just so hard mentally to be able to separate those or to like put those other things in danger. Like, I really get it, but I hope she figures out a way to do that more, because I think she is a really cool person and people should know that. You know, it's like, come on, like, we want to get to know you, and the people that won't go stab you in the back will have your back. You know what I mean? Like, it's like those people are more worth it anyways. Easier said than done. But I think someone that is a really good example, which obviously is like apple of everyone's eye, is Gretchen Whitmer, who just came out with a new book. I don't know if it's available just for pre-order or if it's officially in stores as of today, but all of their like social media for it started. And what she was actually doing, this was funny, I'll send you the TikTok. Maybe I'll remember to put it in the description. But I guess, you know, some people have written books about her, and then someone wrote a book about her. She was like doing this thing. She was like, this one technically about me And it's a picture of another woman with brown hair that like could be like her third cousin, but like it's not her. She's like, this isn't even a picture of me. And it is like so funny in the like,
I love that
classic. But she honestly, like, if she weren't just absolutely slaying it as governor and like woman in politics, like the amount of other careers I could see for, I mean, endless. Because yeah, she's so funny.
And I think that's why she resonates with people, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I think like Kamala can do more of, you know, of like show when like
when she has the relatability to do it. Like there was, I remember she was at Howard for a football game, and there was this interview that she was doing with one of the people that are like in the interview box, like the announcer people. What are those people called? This announcer
commentators.
People? Commentators. She's with the commentators and she was like really like having a great time. They all have this great banter and like it really like, I remember watching that one and being like, that's who she is. Like, this is so great to see.
Kamala, and, right?
Yeah. And I'm like,
yeah. Oh, no, I know all of the things of she does where she's like the cooking videos and when she's like giving her favorite recipes or she's like talking about her skincare routine, like those things hit. And the relatability is so key, especially in a year where people are so mistrustful of government and politicians. That's yeah, why we changed the entire structure of this podcast, is to show the humanity of these people who work in our government. There can be more of that. And not even just from her, but from like a lot of politicians who like think that they can only be one thing, or their comms people think that, you know, their principal can only be one thing. Like, I think it's important to show the spectrum of human.
Totally. Amen. Make that the fucking logo motto of this podcast. It just, or it is, it's at its core, but nonetheless, I really recommend the book. Some of the policies she's helped put in place, I think are really interesting, especially thinking about just this entire presidential race and like her.
And talking about policy that's like not politicized and like not what all we see in the news, like talking about like real fucking policy, real innovative solutions, like. And to hear that from her, our vice president, is amazing. So definitely take the rec. I will myself as well. But with that said, and with that kind of theme, we can introduce our guest in a second. Two quick housekeeping items before we do so. First is next week, we are going to be OOO. So we will be re-releasing an episode, a surprise one, a really good one. We have so many fucking episodes, so there's a large chance you maybe have not listened to it before, but you absolutely should because it's key. I think we can maybe keep that piece of surprise, but just something to look forward to. And then the week following, we will be no episode given the holiday. So
housekeeping,
check. Oh, do you want to do your housekeeping?
Oh, yeah. As I'm saying, Naomi, we forgot one thing. Guys, we extended our merch collection. So if you were like looking at the Gov Club sweatshirts and you're like, guys, I like the design, but it's summer and I want something a little bit lighter. I'm just like, you know, too heavy for the moment. We introduced long sleeve t-shirts, comfort colors, love them. And also a cute little crop top. So if that is the speed that you wish to travel, you now have those options. Like,
we love
pop in that car and suit. Why? I'm just really trying to like take this work trying to somewhere.
Make fetch happen right now.
I think that's the definition of my personality.
It is. Wow. Light bulb. Well, with that said, and all of this said, let's introduce our guest today.
Let's do it. Our guest today is Congressman Ashton Kloss from Massachusetts. And our conversation focuses on social media policy, what's going on in terms of mental health and social media, and really like, what are the solutions for regulating something that we're all quasi addicted to, if not totally addicted to, and that has become literally like the thing that with our phones, extensions of our own arms at this point, which is so crazy. Mm-hmm. So we mentioned touching grass occasionally in this episode, but nonetheless,
crucial.
So crucial. I did that today and I was like, I thought, do I take a picture?
That's what we're going OOO for, is to literally go touch grass. Oh my God, Samantha, I didn't even tell you where I'm going.
If you say Montana, I'm going to kill you.
I'm going to Montana.
I'm going to kill you.
I'm going to Montana.
Mm-hmm.
It manifested and it came true.
What are you doing in Montana?
I'm going with my dad. And then my grandma's going to come for a few days to a little family affair. I have some family who live there, so we're going to stay with them.
My family is so large.
We have talked about this. Grandpa, I know. Oldest of 12. Mother, youngest of 9. Like, there's just humans everywhere. But yeah, I'm going to Montana, so I'll be sending lots of pics and hopefully seeing signs for our future Montana senator.
You mean governor?
Future Montana governor. Same electorate.
It's a fair point. You best be sending all the pics and vids and all the things. Feel free to send any cute horses my way. And if
I will be on horses.
Good, because I was going to say, if you don't attend some type of rodeo event, I will be offended.
I know. I need to look up the rodeo schedule because that is high on my priority list of to-dos.
Yeah, see,
perhaps
it's like
the 4th of July rodeo. That would be fantastic. Fun times.
You have to.
I know. Like, I've been looking. I haven't seen anything, but I looked like a few weeks ago. And now I need to like do another search.
Oh my God. Guys, I know we have some Montana listeners. If you have any recs in terms of rodeo things, just even honestly fun things to do in Montana, send them our
all
way.
Things. I'll be in Missoula area. So.
Amen to that. Well, I lost my train of thought because now my brain's in Montana.
Now we can just say without further ado.
Oh, that's where we're at. Okay. Anyways, without further ado, here is Congressman Auchincloss.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Hello and welcome to Girl in the Gub, the podcast. Guys, today we have a member of Congress from the state of Massachusetts. He is also the youngest dad in Congress, I believe. So we have to start off with asking the question, of course, what is that like? What has that sort of, you know, down for your perspective on policy, and how does that impact those conversations that you have in the halls of Congress, especially after this past week when we had someone's young son having quite the viral moment in the midst of, you know, some Michigoths on the floor. So curious, you know, just generally, like, what that is like for you, a dad in Congress, young dad in Congress, how does that shape everything for you?
First of all, thanks for having me on. I've been looking forward to this conversation. Going into next Congress, I will, in fact, be the youngest parent, period, in wow. either chamber. I have a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old. And I commute back and forth, Boston to Washington, to spend as much time as possible with them. They live in Massachusetts with my wife. And having little kids makes the job feel both bigger and smaller. And what I mean by that is, when we think about issues like climate change, about gun violence, about protecting reproductive rights for the next generation of women, I look to my kids, and it's not abstract or anecdotal to me. I question what kind of air they're going to breathe, what kind of safety they're going to experience in their schools, the kind of culture that my daughters will grow up in, and whether they have the same rights that my wife was able to grow up with. So these are personal to me, and they bring a sense of urgency and, frankly, at times, an existential nature to it. And of course, that's true for protecting our democracy as well. When you've got someone like Donald Trump on the ballot and he promises to be a dictator on day one, I think about day 5,000 that my kids will be growing up in. But it also makes the job feel smaller because in my line of work, there are always slights and grievances and perturbations, and people are always mean to me, frankly, online or in person, because that's kind of the nature of the business, is that we're constantly in a big contest of ideas and personalities. But when I walk through the door and my 4-year-old wants to play Legos or my 3-year-old wants to take a walk in the park, it all sort of just slides off your back, right? And so that tension between making the job feel bigger and then making the job feel smaller is actually really healthy for me, because it helps me scope the work, I think, in the right way.
Totally. Well, I think having that balance also of on, not necessarily like online, but like, you know, at work and whatnot, and then the balance of in real life with like people that actually matter in your life specifically is huge. And some of the legislation that you focus on has to deal with being online, having that separate space where people like to make videos that go viral, you know, about their coworkers and whatnot, and get a little, you know, crazy. So I'm curious what your perspective is on social media, on, you know, sort of trying to reel it in. You know, what does that look like for you?
I'm at that age, 36 years old, where I think that I am a semi-digital native. Facebook was cool when I was in high school. So like, that's my age range, right?
Yeah.
To some of your listeners, that's going to feel very old, but Facebook was like really cool when I was in high school and going into college. So I have experienced social media organically, but I also now can see it, I think, a bit dispassionately and objectively as a parent and as a policymaker. And what I am seeing is that the social media corporations, TikTok, Meta, Twitter, Discord, Reddit, these are the most powerful, most wealthy corporations in human history. Full stop. Standard Oil, the railroads, they got nothing on them. Mm-hmm. And these social media corporations for the last 15 years have made their money by productizing the attention spans of young people. There's an old aphorism, if you're not paying, you're the product. And for more than a decade, people have been scrolling and they've been using these platforms for free. And they've gotten a lot of value out of them. I don't want to discount that. I like using this stuff. You know, we all find our tribe online, and that can be very healthy. But they are extracting more value than they are creating. And they're doing that by attention fracking and monetizing young people's socio-emotional and cognitive development. And what we see, unfortunately, since 2012 is that mental health for young people has plummeted. And 2012 was an important moment because that was the moment when the iPhone, with its front-facing camera and with the ubiquity of social media apps, really became the standard operating system for childhood. And unfortunately, we have largely allowed a phone-based childhood to supplant a play-based childhood. And the mental health of young women and the mental health of young men has declined. And we see that across the board in the United States, in the United Kingdom, and in other peer countries.
Yeah. Attention fracking. I really love that term. I've never heard it, but going to use that moving forward. I think that's really, you know, puts a nail on the head. I'm also curious, okay, what are some of the solutions we're looking at?
There's not going to be one silver bullet. Some of it's policy, some of it's, I think, cultural shifts. Let me put forward a few things that as a parent and as a policymaker, I would like to see. One is no smartphones until eighth grade. Another is no social media until at least 16 years old. And I think partly that is sort of just peer standards. I think that's kind of parent-driven about groups and communities deciding that they think 16 is the right age, so you don't have those network effects where one peer is feeling pressured because all their friends are on mm-hmm. it. But partly it can be policy as well. And I've got legislation that would raise the age of internet adulthood from 13 to 16 years old. Right now at 13 years old, 13, you are considered an adult online. That's patently ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I think we can make it so that 16 becomes the standard for when people can create and use a social media account. I think a phone-free school mentality here in the United States would be very healthy. Lockers for phones where kids have those 7 to 8 hours a day free from electronic devices. And then I think there's another element of this, which is not just pushing back on the phone-based childhood, but also trying to build up the play-based childhood. That's just giving kids the physical and emotional space to be with each other and to flex those muscles of pro-social behavior on the playground, cycling or walking to school, hanging out together after school in person. And I think parents, and I will cop to this as a young dad, we have this sense that we've got to be snow plowing in front of our kids constantly and removing every obstacle and smoothing out every disagreement that they have with their siblings or their peers. And the truth is that kids need more agency and autonomy, and parents need to back off a little bit.
Yeah. I'm really sorry. I have a follow-up question. I'm really curious too, because there's such like this interesting kind of like politicized conversation and culture around like parents' rights and all of these things. And I think they're all kind of tied together in ways. I know you mentioned that some of it is legislative and some of it's just cultural. And I'm curious how some of those solutions you just named off can be legislated, or if they should, or like what falls into just like, how do we culture shift versus how do we make solutions with policy?
It's such an important question. And I think you're so right that there is this positive feedback loop that can happen where policy is reinforcing cultural shifts and cultural shifts are laying the groundwork for political action. So let me just give like a concrete example of that. There is legislation in Congress right now that would say that broadly speaking, K-12 schools that receive federal funding have to, on their internet providing services, prevent social media companies from being accessible. So when you're on school Wi-Fi, you can't access Twitter or Facebook or whatever. That is a federal policy stick that is trying to, though, be paired with more of an organic, community-driven approach that principals and PTOs and students are saying, hey, we want to have a phone-free school dynamic. And I think neither one of those things in a vacuum can work, but together they can build off of each other.
Yeah, that's super interesting, because I feel like also, and like we're very online for, you know, our jobs, and we see so many crazy things. I could write a book on some of the crazy things that I've seen so my friends that don't work in social media couldn't even imagine existing. And I oftentimes like ask myself, like, well, where are the parents of some of these kids? Like, which sounds like such a weird question to ask as someone that's like my age, like, where are their parents? Like, I sound like an absolute boomer, like trying to like, you know, comprehend someone's social media job. I know I'm having a real boomer moment also like the last few weeks. So like somebody check on me, but regardless, you know, what is like, again, I guess the question is like, where are the parents? And have you had conversations with parents that also, and I'm not a parent, let me just put that out there for the world, my God, you know, where they're also sort of like asking that question?
You can't legislate parenting. You can't legislate common sense, I think, in the household. And yeah. I also think the American body politic doesn't want a lecture from their member of Congress, right, about how to raise their kid. But what you can do, and what I try to be, I think, respectful of, is how do I make parents' jobs easier? Because right now, family time is competing with screen time. And you've got mom and dad who are working, they're trying to figure out their kids' extracurriculars, they're picking them up from school. And oh, by the way, they're competing against a $3 trillion company who has 100,000 software engineers whose only job is to keep your kids scrolling for as long as possible. That's literally the metric they get paid on. And it's an unfair fight. It's a totally unfair fight. How do I level that playing field? Well, one way is to raise the age of internet adulthood from 13 to 16 years old and put some enforcement teeth behind it, because right now, even the 13-year age limit the social media corporations are cheating on. So that gives parents, I think, a little bit of support. One is to try to build out this phone-free school mentality. I think that's another thing that gives parents some peer support. But another one, I think, is to hold these social media corporations accountable for the toxicity that they have allowed to spread throughout their platform. For the last 25 years, there's been a law called Section 230. It was there at the birth of the internet in the 1990s. And it said that any social media platform, or really any internet service provider, period, is not liable for third-party content on their platform. Now, that made a lot of sense in the 1990s because people were posting recipe blogs online, and if some knucklehead posts something in the comments section, that shouldn't be your problem. Fine. World has changed a lot. What it does now is it means that if there were to be, and unfortunately we are heading in this direction if we're not careful, the proliferation of deepfake pornography and intimate privacy violations throughout Discord or throughout Reddit or throughout Instagram, those internet service providers and social media platforms would not be liable for it. And that is so clearly antithetical to the kind of corporate responsibility that we want to require of companies in the United States that law needs to be changed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The lack of responsibility and like ability to hold those companies accountable really reminds me of the gun industry. And I see like a lot of similarities 100%. Between the two of them. I'm like, oh, it's just like, would we like take a carbon copy situation?
You are quite literally correct. I'll just point out, you are actually statutorily correct in that the gun industry is the only other industry that in 2005, they also got immunity from prosecution. It's funny how that works, right? Big social media corporations and the gun lobby are the two ones that have gotten immunity from prosecution. And if you see how kids are suffering in this country today, a lot of it comes from mental health detriments from social media, and of course, from the epidemic of gun violence.
Yeah, totally. There's definitely an intersection happening there across the issues, but also, yeah, they mirror each other in so many ways. I also think it's interesting. I feel like our generation, like Sam and I particularly, I see this and feel this shift too, that like by the time we're parents, I feel like we're going to be like, very adamant about children not being on phones as much, or just shoving an iPad to like as a pacifier. Cause I feel like, and I know Sam, I feel like we've talked about this before where we're like, I wish just like I don't have to be on social media. We literally have to be for work. So it's like, I wish I could have my little Firefly or like Razer flip phone back. Cause Jesus Christ, like life would just be so much simpler and better. If you've seen This Is 40, when they're like having the conversation around the dinner table, telling their kid to go play with sticks and they can't.
I am so heartened to hear you say that. And I'm starting to sense that amongst my like younger millennial cohort, right?
Yeah.
So I don't want to throw shade at other generations. We all have our strengths and weaknesses. But I think Gen X unfortunately got caught a little bit cross-footed, where they were like, oh, this stuff is fine and cool. And like, it's all laissez-faire, free game. And it's been challenging, right? Whereas the younger millennials, all of us, when we talk at the park with our kids, like are so dialed into like, well, when are you going to give them a phone? When am I like, what are you going to allow them to do? How are we going to push back on this? Because people are keyed into it now. And your generation, I think, is going to be the savviest by far. And I think it's ultimately going to be that the Gen Zs who actually put in place the best federal digital legislation.
Yeah, and find that balance. I think that's coming for sure. I'm curious your meet cute with politics, if you want to call it that, or just how you got in.
There is nothing about politics that's cute.
No, you're right. Except for all of us.
Really, my start in politics was local. I ran for city council in my hometown. I'd just gotten back from the Marine Corps. I wanted to continue public service in some format, even though I was working in the private sector during the day. And so a nights and weekends kind of city council job was the way that I could get the best traction on that. And I just knocked 15,000 doors. There's nothing glamorous about it. It was just every day, 4 hours, clipboard, and one-on-one conversations. The experience of having thousands of one-on-one conversations with real humans is still my most important political compass, because it just underscored for me the deep reservoir of common sense and decency that exists in the American electorate. I know that the way politics looks, particularly national politics, is that it is a performance-based, outrage-driven circus. And the truth is, it's really not as bad as all that. If you cut through the cable news and social media noise, 70% of people, both elected and voting, who are between the 40-yard lines and trying to hammer things out for the good of the country.
Totally. So actually, true. I was just having a conversation about that with like a sister, a friend, oh my God, a friend's sister that slid into my DMs on IG. And she was like, oh my gosh, I'm so over politics. It's so toxic. And one of the things I said to her, I was like, yeah, on its face, like you're seeing like some of the most insane things, the wild, crazy lines, like no shade to Moskowitz, but some of his like antics too. You got Marjorie Taylor Greene going nuts as well. You know, all the things. I was like, but there actually are things happening. Like there are even pieces of bipartisan legislation that are being created and whatnot. Like it just doesn't get the eyes that it should, and to like not give up on it. So I think that's like a really important message for this year and beyond, is to like not give up on politics and to like stay in the game. And I'm curious from your end, from being in it, like what your advice would be to someone that's just so frustrated and so over what they're seeing.
Few things. And I appreciate that question, because I really think it's kind of the core of it. How do we keep people engaged as citizens, as opposed to giving in to the cynicism or the nihilism that unfortunately could help the people like Donald Trump? What Donald Trump is banking on, what his whole movement is banking on, is not necessarily that people are really rooting for him. It's that people just tune out and give up. That's when the strong men and the authoritarians win, is when disinformation floods the zone and civic engagement dries up and it's just everyone throws up their hands. And that's what we have to fight back against. So I would argue for two things. One is, look at the scoreboard over the last 3 years. Has there been a lot of nonsense coming out of Congress? Of course there has. There's also been the bipartisan infrastructure law, which is going to get lead-free, PFAS-free drinking water throughout communities in this country. The Inflation Reduction Act, inaptly named, because it was actually the biggest, boldest climate action and clean energy investment in history. Bipartisan gun safety legislation, which if you had asked me if we were going to get that done, I would have been in disbelief, but we have saved thousands of lives because of that law. Electoral Count Act reform to help heal our democracy, the PACT Act for veterans. I mean, I can keep going here, but we really passed meaningful legislation that is going to meaningfully improve people's lives, senior citizens all the way through Gen Z. The second thing I would say is, other than the scoreboard, look local.
Yeah.
Local politics works. Mayors, city councils, school committees, organizing at the local level and using political power to accomplish concrete issue objectives, whether it's housing or education policy or transportation policy, is such a refreshing way to engage, because the feedback loops are tighter and people don't have the luxury of just pontificating with sort of abstract ideas. It's like, listen, are these streets paved or not? And if not, I'm going to go knock doors and run against you. So organizing locally is an antidote to cynicism.
Love it.
Totally.
Yes. Well, this has been great. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us. Also loved all the social media internet conversation. I think it's such an important one and one we haven't really dug super deep into. So we appreciate all your insight there and want to make sure you give all of the resources and plugs of where people can find you and keep in touch. So feel free to plug all the things.
Jake Auk on Twitter and Instagram. But most importantly, as we discussed, follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I'm going to be doing my best
there
work.
There it is.
Yeah. Love it.
That's perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.